going on, guys? Welcome to a brand new episode of Tariq Radio. Doing a late night show tonight, but we're here. We're making it do what it do. Today's show is brought to you by a brand new book called The High Flyers, a book by Trina, by Zori Maxwell. It's a real cool, slick, romantic novel, and it's available for sale right now on Amazon.com, Amazon Kindle, and ZoriMaxwell.com, ZoriMaxwell.com. We're going to chop up some good game on tonight's show, family. Let everybody know that we're live right now. We're going to take a real quick commercial break. Don't you move a muscle, because we'll be back right here on Tariq Radio. Don't move a muscle.
You still ain't getting women? Really?
Come on, son. You need to go to badboymembership.com and step up your game. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Mr. Locario, the bad boy of the dating game, and I'm telling you that if you really want to attract beautiful women, you need to go to badboymembership.com. This is where you get 45 through 90 minute step-by-step dating advice tutorials every month. Just sign up, follow the advice, and you'll get the woman you want. Go to badboymembership.com. That's badboymembership.com.
What's up? Are you a fan of hip-hop and self-help and personal development? Then check out my man Poe at Popolitikin. Founded in 2008, Popolitikin is a self-help meets hip-hop brand. And with each interview, they teach the babies and they share success secrets with you, the listener. Past guests of the show includes Jay Prince, Yo Gotti, Currency, MC Light, Dead Prez, rapper Big Pooh, and many more. Popolitikin has featured over 500 guests on his show. Popolitikin also showcases a lot of the up-and-coming new artists in the game. So subscribe right now on iTunes and Spotify and follow Popolitikin on social media at Popolitikin. Yo, cupcake season is right around the corner, family, and you need to get your fragrance game all up in order. So you need to check out ashkicking.com. That's a black-owned business that sells all natural health and beauty products, and it also has fragrance products. You can get beauty products such as body butter, hair moisturizer, face moisturizer, unique incense burners, incense sticks, scented candles, and so much more. So again, you need to check out ashkicking, that's K-I-C-K-I-N, .com.
The year is 2079. The futuristic nation of New Albion has been created to maintain a new racial apartheid system. There is a planned genocide that is going to target the nation's black population. A small group of black revolutionaries band together to launch guerrilla warfare attacks against their oppressors. Do they fail? Or do they succeed? Find out the answer by reading the book, Avoid the Machines, the new novel by author Scotty Vasco. Avoid the Machines, now available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
You are now tuning in to the King of Game, Tariq Elite, on Tariq Elite Radio.
I am delivered! Yo, we're back. We're back. What's going on, guys? Glad to have y'all tuning in right here on Tariq Radio. Doing a late night show, late night broadcast. Shout out to all the overseas folks. Usually when I'm on late, I get a lot of overseas listeners. And I know all my New York listeners are up right now. Y'all don't go to sleep worth a damn. Y'all probably just on y'all way to a club. You dig? Anywho, let me get my stuff together over here. I'm hearing sounds in the back. But anyway, man, I hope you guys go to HiddenColorsFilm.com to get Hidden Colors 1, 2, 3, and 4. Hidden Colors 5 is coming to theaters this summer. It's going to be a doozy. We're going to make it do what it do. Shout out to all the global family, and shout out in particular to the ADOS Foundational Black American Family in the house representing. A lot of stuff we're going to touch on tonight's broadcast. Did you guys see the Grammys the other day, this weekend? I think the Grammys was on this weekend. And they had Jennifer Lopez doing that Motown tribute. And a lot of people were talking about that, and a lot of people were confused about that Jennifer Lopez Motown quote-unquote performance. A lot of people felt a certain way about it. A lot of people saw it. There was a lot of, it looked very, had a very Vegas-y look. The thing about it, I like Jennifer Lopez when she's in her lane. I have no problem with Jennifer Lopez, but I, like others, you know, we felt a certain way about that performance because it was supposed to be a Motown tribute. There were so many talented black artists they could have gotten to be a part of that. So what was that all about, having J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez, doing a Motown tribute? What was that about? And understand, people in the dominant society, they don't do things just to be doing it. There's always a rhyme and reason when they do something. So when they do something like that, they're sending a message. You know, they always have to dilute the things that we control and dominate. Having Jennifer Lopez do that tribute, that was an open act of passive-aggressive disrespect. And a lot of black folks, we got to understand when people are being disrespectful towards us, a lot of people in the dominant society, they will do it in a very passive-aggressive way. They'll do it as if they're paying homage to you. And we got to understand that part of the con game. They're very good at acting like they're paying homage while they're blatantly disrespecting you. You know, they do that a lot with overweight sisters. They will get like a Gabby Sidibe and say, we're going to honor you by putting you on the cover of a fashion magazine. And that's their passive aggressive way of clowning. Like, we're going to honor you by making you overweight black girl. We're going to make you the high school prom queen. They did that at a couple of schools before. I think they did it at a school in Mississippi. There was a very overweight black girl in this white school, and they made her the prom queen. They were parading her around, and, you know, a poor thing wasn't in on the joke. But they do little stuff like that. And they've been doing that since slavery. They've always done little passive. Now, they could be a little bolder in slavery, but the thing is, they like to insult us and act like they're giving us a compliment. In slavery, they used to do that. That's why so many black people, black men and women during slavery, if you look up slave records, you'll see the name Leroy, especially down there in New Orleans, and I talked about this before, and you'll see the name Queen. And you know, they did a movie about slavery with Halle Berry called Queen, but Queen was a very common name during slavery. And we know the name Leroy, that's a stereotypical black name. Now, why is Leroy that? Leroy is a French word. It means the king. And they would name a lot of their slaves, their black slaves, Leroy as the king. They would name him the king because it was ironic to have a person who used to be a king, because we've always bragged about being kings and queens. And when they captured us, we said, hey, man, you don't treat me like that. I'm a king. I was a king in my country. And they were like, oh, really? So you were a king in your country. Okay, well, I'm going to name you king. And king, go out there and pick that cotton, king. Look at, that's my slave, king, over there picking that cotton. That's my slave, queen, over there picking that tobacco. That's Leroy, the king. Look at him. Look at my king over there picking that indigo. You understand? So they've always done little stuff like that, done passive aggressive things where they act like they're complimenting us and paying homage to us when they're dissing us. That's really what blackface is about. You notice all these people who get caught using blackface, they try to pretend that they did it to be complimentary. All these politicians who are getting outed as wearing blackface back in the day, they say stuff like, well, yeah, I had blackface. I was going as Curtis Blow back in 1980. I was dressing up as Curtis Blow. As one politician actually said that. He got caught in, he had blackface on in 1980, and it was only a handful of rappers out at the time. Hell, I won't even say a handful. It was like, what, three in 1980? It was the Sugar Hill Gang and Curtis Blow. In 1980, wasn't really no rappers out like that, especially on a nationwide level. And they always act like they were paying homage to somebody. And black folks, we got to get off that. We got to get off believing them. We better understand when we're being dissed. We got to understand when we are being insulted. And with this J-Lo tribute to Motown, that was an insult. That was them trying to take over our music genres. They've always been trying to infiltrate our genres. They've done that with every one of our genres, with jazz, country, even hip-hop. You look at some of the top hip-hop artists, a lot of them are white. But they've always been infiltrating our genres. And just like with R&B and soul, they've been trying to position themselves to infiltrate that, just like they did rock and roll. Remember, the white supremacists, they're parasites, they're leeches. So they have to find a strong host to leech off of. But the J-Lo thing was disrespectful in so many ways. Number one, when you look at Motown, the brand, it was the epitome of black class, of black elegance, of black soul, of black people being poised, black people being smooth, suave, debonair. Everything about Motown, when you look at it, you think about the Temptations. They were smooth, debonair dudes. Now, forget about the stuff that was going on off stage, behind the scenes. They had a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. But their image was smooth, polished. Diana Ross, smooth, polished. The Supreme, smooth, polished. The Jacksons, Jackson 5, smooth, polished, soulful. You know, they taught their artists, they took them to etiquette classes. They were the face, and they made that brand the embodiment of black excellence. Black people being upscale. That was the whole image of it. It was, and this is why that brand has lasted. It was about the personalities of the artist. When you look at those Motown artists, they had personalities, man. These were personable people who drew you into their personality and their talent. The Motown singers, they didn't need all those laser-like pyrotechnics and all that on stage. They didn't need that. All they need was a microphone and a light, and that's it. They didn't need all that extra stuff. That didn't represent Motown worth a damn. So all that stuff, and look, and I don't have a problem with Jennifer Lopez, with her doing what she does. When she's in her lane doing what she's doing, that's cool in the gang. But then when you're trying to say you're doing a Motown tribute, that's not Motown. That has nothing to do with Motown. And she's out there with the little outfit on and the doing the salsa and the pussy popping and the booty shaking. That's not Motown. I didn't like that at all. That's not Motown. And I talked about this before. When a lot of these other people, these other groups from other cultures, they come around black folks, you know, they come with the coochie popping when they come around us. But when they get around their own, they know how to pull it together. When they get around their own, they know how to represent their culture in an elegant way when it's their culture. But all of the salsa and the coochie popping, that had nothing to do with Motown. And I saw Smokey. Smokey had on the soft shoe tap shoes. Smokey had on the soft shoe shoes. The soft tap shoes. He was soft shoeing. He was trying to say, hey, Motown music for everybody. People should shut up and just, you know, because people were criticizing the whole thing. And people, you know, they were, the reporters were out there asking Smokey Robinson now. And I like Smokey. I like Smokey, but Smokey had the tap shoes on a little bit. And he was on that Motown is for everybody. So now, you know, when Smokey and a lot of these guys go touring, we got to understand most of their audiences are white. We do have to understand that. I get it. I get that most of your audiences are white. So was Smokey, let me ask the chat room here, was Smokey sacrificing a little of the integrity of Motown just to get along? I mean, if he would have said something like, hey, I don't really like this, if they had any kind of reservations about it, do you think that the audience that goes to see them now, which are white, do you think he didn't want to sacrifice some of his white audience? Yeah? Now, I'm built a little different. I don't give a damn, but I understand if these guys' bread and butter is a white audience. You know, I get it. I get that you don't want to sacrifice that, but you don't have to do all that. Y'all just stupid. Y'all are stupid by saying that. It's for everybody. There's a way you can go about it. I can understand you might not want to go in on J-Lo or whatever, but Smokey had the cape on a little bit too hard. You dig? The cape was a little too hard with Smokey. And my thing is this, man, with the Grammys, you know, they allow that type of stuff to infiltrate our genres. You know, when it comes to the black genre, people come around talking about, ain't this for everybody? This is for everybody. Everybody can do it. But let me tell you something. When there are genres that are designated for those in the dominant white society, they don't let black folks touch that. They don't let you get near their genres. And the Grammys, they're a prime example of that. Y'all remember a couple of years ago when Beyonce had a country song called Daddy Lessons. It was a fly country song. I think she even had a little remix with the Dixie Chicks or something. But she had a single, Daddy Lessons, and they submitted it to the Grammys, and the Grammys, the country committee said, hell no. We ain't about to let you get this nominated. And that her album was hot that year. Her album was smoking hot that year, and the Grammy country committee would not let her even submit the song. They did not let her submit that song. They said, hell no, because most likely she probably would have won. But you see, they don't let you even get near their stuff. They don't let us get near their stuff. But they want to rape and rummage and pillage through all of our stuff. And see, this is why we got to take control of it and we got to own it. That's one of the reasons why I did the Mink Slide album. That's one of the main reasons why I did the Mink Slide album. I wanted to do a traditional funk album. That's why it was so critically acclaimed. And the thing is, family, when we take control of stuff and we get on code, because shout out to the people who bought the album, our Mink Slide album. Now, we all got on code and everybody supported the album. That's why the album charted so high. The Mink Slide album, man, that thing, when we put it out, it debuted in the top 20 on Billboard. And that shocked everybody. I started getting all types of phone calls. Then it was number one on Amazon. Not Amazon. It was number one on Google Play. It was number one for like 2 weeks of all R&B albums. And the thing is, friend, we got to understand this. We ain't got a soft shoe. We got to start having confidence in ourselves. We don't have to get out there soft shoeing for nobody, man. We can take control of our genres. And somebody said, our album, Mink Slide, should have got a Grammy. And I agree. But I don't trip on that. I agree 100%. Our album should have been at least nominated for a Grammy. That was a good-ass album. There was no other album funkier than the Egyptian Musk. please. But I wasn't even tripping on that stuff, though. But the thing is, we got to understand, it's enough of us to support our stuff and be good. We got this thing where we need some white approval, and you really don't. That's just a self-esteem thing. You really don't need white approval. There's enough black folks here and globally to make our stuff pop off. We just got to get on code. And we got to look out for each other when we get on code. That's why I've been talking about Sam Cooke, and I want y'all to see that documentary on Netflix. Very good documentary about Sam Cooke. That brother was on code. That brother, his music crossed over, but he still looked out for people within black society, and he wanted to create a lane for those in black society and own his masters and own his own label and his own publishing. And at the time, this man was being threatened by the mafia. They were threatening to kill him. The FBI was on him, and then he ended up getting killed very mysteriously. And anytime we get on code and we do something successful, you know, we always get some kind of backlash. That's why we have to look out for each other. That's why we don't get on that, I got money, so I'm different. We got to get off that thing. That's why my brother Floyd Mayweather, I don't like what Floyd Mayweather was doing at that Gucci store. You know, that Gucci put out this little outfit that looked like blackface. A lot of people are like, hey, we need to back up off Gucci for a minute. A couple of black folks out here caping for Gucci, Kodak Black. He's out here caping for Gucci. I'm going to try to find that clip of Kodak Black caping for Gucci. And Floyd Mayweather was kind of caping for Gucci too. Not a good look, Floyd. And I like Floyd, but Floyd, you don't want to go down that route, bro. Because too many black folks been out here fighting for you. When these people are calling you all types of niggas after these fights, black folks out here looking out and fighting for you. And then Floyd get out here talking about, well, yeah, I ain't no follower, man. I do what I want to do. I'm going to go get me some Gucci. That's not a good look, brother. And I know there's a lot of yes men around and they ain't going to say nothing. But yeah, I'm saying it with love. That's not a good look, bro. That's on some I'm not black, I'm OJ type shit. But this is Kodak Black right here talking about Gucci. This is Kodak Black.
A few more Gucci little clothes that I bought and I'm going to wear it. Fuck y'all, I got it rolling on, bitch. I'm going to wear my Gucci. Hey, listen, honestly, I don't really feel like them people like, I'm black, right? And I'm thug to the bone, right? I fuck with white people, right? But sometimes black people do be reaching. So, like, for no reason, just be reaching for little shit. Them people ain't do nothing. Them people ain't say nothing about no racist shit. Them people just had a little ski mask. It's all kind of ski masks in the world, bro. Huh? You people don't know no racist shit, bitch. How about y'all go shoot up the KKK then? How about, if everybody feel like it's on some other shit? On some other shit? How about go surround goddamn what you call?
Lord, what you talking about? All right, that's Kodak Black. I don't know what he was really talking about, but okay, he's out there supporting Gucci. And he said we be doing too much. Black folks out here doing too much, complaining about racism. Now when they gaffle him up again, you know, he gets locked up every other week and he's going to be looking for some kind of support. See, y'all, brothers, y'all get y'all a couple of dollars and get on some I'm not black, I'm OJ. Y'all got to get off that. And Floyd was out here again. Floyd was like, yo, I'm spending money. I ain't no follower. I do what I want to do. And what's your point of supporting Gucci when they've done something that many people suspect of being disrespectful to black society? You see, when you do stuff like that, Floyd, and I know Floyd's people, and I want y'all to let Floyd listen to this. When you do stuff like that, Floyd, that sounds like you're trying to pander to white people. When you do stuff like that, Floyd, I know Floyd says something about, yeah, I'm black first, but ain't no but, brother. when you do something like that, yeah, it might, you know, that's blackface. It might be blackface, but I can do what I want. What you, it almost says, hey, white people, I feel the same way about these niggas. I'm different. You dig? You don't want to go that route, Floyd, especially after so many black people stood up for you and stuck up for you when people were racially attacking you. You dig? You just don't want to go that route. You dig? Or you should go that route if that's how you feel, so we know how you get down, brother. If that's how you feel, if that's your get down, knock yourself out. Because, see, they set y'all up when they do shit like that. The white supremacists are very good at setting people up. They'll tell black folks, you different, you ain't like the others, and then niggas start talking real crazy. And then the white people turn on you, which they always do, when you least expect it, and then you have no base to help you up, to hold you up. We abandon you because you abandon us. So you don't want to be that type. Don't let that money fool you. You still in a system of white supremacy. Don't let that paper fool you. But again, like I was saying, there's a lot of us in black society, in global black society, where we can get on code and look out for each other and maintain the integrity of the things that we create. You know, with Teddy Pendergrass, and I've been talking about him lately, there's a great documentary about him on Showtime, and it talked about a lot of his successes, and it talked about the car accident he got in 1982. A lot of us, we forget how successful and how thorough Teddy Pendergrass was in the late 70s. Teddy Pendergrass, this brother, without even crossing over, this brother went platinum. He had like four consecutive platinum albums back to back in the 70s, and this was without crossing over. This was with just black radio getting it popping. And, you know, Teddy Pendergrass, that was unheard of back then. For an R&B artist to have back-to-back platinum albums, that's why people never really talk about how thorough Teddy Pendergrass was. A lot of folks don't know about that. They don't like to show black artists being that successful without them crossing over. You understand? That's always a problem. That always, you know, they always try to downplay that. They've always tried to downplay that. And at the time when Teddy was cranking out them hits out there in Philadelphia, understand, and where my Philly heads at in the room, Philadelphia in the late 70s, you know, it was run by a white supremacist police commissioner and a mayor, Frank Rizzo, an infamous white supremacist out there. Frank Rizzo terrorized black society in Philly. The MOVE organization, there were two incidents with the MOVE organization. It was a black organization out there. There was one incident in 1978. They had some altercations with them. And then in the 80s, they blew up a whole city block out there in Philly. So that was the atmosphere in Philadelphia in the 70s and early 80s. You had that Frank Rizzo asshole out there. And they were harassing the hell out of Teddy Pendergrass, because Teddy Pendergrass was this very successful dude. He never crossed over. Black folks loved him. And he's a big rich man driving around Philly and Rolls Royces and all this stuff. So, you know, the police would harass this brother all the time. They gaffled him up, beat him up and all that. And Teddy had lawsuits against the Philadelphia Police Department. So they were doing little stuff to sabotage him, and many of his cars would be sabotaged. People would cut the brakes and sabotage his motor. So when he was in that car accident in the 80s, what happened? He put his foot on the brakes and the brakes wouldn't react. And that's how the car ran off the road. And there were other rumors that it was a transsexual woman in the car. People didn't know she was a tranny. There were a lot of rumors about that. Some people's the police might have put out the rumor that she was giving him oral sex while he was driving and that's how he crashed, but that's not it. That's not what happened. I thought that for a long time too, because I heard that rumor. but the brakes went out on his car, and people were like, somebody must have cut his brakes again. You dig? But again, you had a corrupt, all my Philly people know what I'm talking about. You had a very corrupt police department out there. Extremely corrupt out there. So seeing a black man out there getting all them women with all that money, you know that just put a bug in their asses. You dig? But the thing is, we got to get on code, and we have to understand that we got to protect our genres. We have to protect our things. And we have to understand when people are trying to leech off of us and pander to us and run game on us, like Kamala Harris. Yes, we're talking about Kamala Harris again. Now, for those who don't know, Kamala Harris was on The Breakfast Club again. She was on The Breakfast Club, and, you know, they were asking her about a black agenda. She started talking in circles. She was all over the place, giving these non-answers. Then she started doing the trickle-down game. Well, I'm going to do some prison reform, some criminal reform and HBCU, and then some money for some poor people, and just all of this roundabout talking in circles, nothing tangible for black people specifically. And they were talking to her, and the subject of weed came up, and she talked about how, you know, she smoked weed, and Charlamagne said, when'd you do it in college? Now let me play the clip of this, because this clip has gone viral and a lot of people are talking about it, and people are trying to backpedal on this and try to change what she said, because she said something where she slipped up. Now, Kamala Harris, you know, she's always trying to make it seem like she's hip. They always have her trying to make it seem like she's all immersed into black culture, so she's hip and she's with it and all this stuff. And that's why, you know, she's talking about smoking weed, so I guess she can appeal to blacks. And, you know, I don't know why they keep letting this woman make hip hop references. Y'all know when she did that Tribe Called Quest thing, and she was like, yeah, ain't that right, Fife? And nobody told this woman that Fife was dead. I mean, it's just embarrassing at this point. But this is her talking about smoking weed in college and rap records she listened to. Listen to this.
I smell marijuana. I have personally known people who only benefited from its use. So there are a lot of reasons why we need to legalize.
Have you ever smoked?
I have.
Okay.
Like in college, I inhale. I did inhale. It was a long time ago. But yes.
I know you have to go. They say you have to go.
I just broke news.
I mean, was it in college?
Okay. Now y'all catch that. She said she smoked weed. Charlamagne said, was it in college? She said, uh-huh. Okay. So we've established that she smoked weed in college. Okay. She smoked weed in college.
See, I like stuff like that. That's a real honest answer. Was it a blunt or a joint?
It was a joint.
Hey.
Yeah.
You remember the high?
I do.
So if it was legalized all throughout the country and medicinal, would you, you know, do it?
Listen, again? I think that it gives a lot of people joy, and we need more joy.
We need more joy in this world.
Another myth is, I don't know if it's a myth, but they say you took campaign donations from big banks.
No. I have not taken from corporations and big banks. I don't believe that I have. No.
Now, I also wanted to know before you have to go.
And in fact, I fought the big banks and fought them, and it was a vicious battle because
mm-hmm.
I was I held out. When I was Attorney General of California during the mortgage and foreclosure crisis, I would not take the deal that they were giving to other states, and I pulled California out of it because I said it wasn't enough, and we got into a big old battle. Where
she's going to get back to the weed thing in a second.
They were sending leaflets, or at least we believe it came from them, around the country saying, if Kamala Harris doesn't get back in this settlement, then you won't get this or you will get this. It was a high-pressure battle that we won.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my history with the
What
banks.
Do you listen to? Because I know she has to go. So what does Kamala Harris listen to?
What were you listening to when you was high?
Okay. See that? Now watch these questions. I'm slowing it down and stopping it because people are trying to change it up. She said, what were you listening to when you were high? Meaning in college. She said she got high in college. Okay? What were you listening to when you were high? And he's referencing when she was high in college. Right? Are we on the same page? I'm slowing this down so y'all can feel me. Are you guys all on the same page? All right. What was she listening to when she was high in college? Okay.
California out of it because I said it wasn't enough.
I took
we
it back
got
a
into
second.
A big old battle where I was. The banks really took me on. They were sending leaflets.
I took it back a little bit too far, but y'all just follow. Y'all follow.
Around the country saying, if Kamala Harris doesn't get back in this settlement, then you won't get this or you will get this. It was a high pressure battle that we won. Mm-hmm. But that's my history with the
banks.
What
do you listen to? Because I know she has to go. So what does Kamala Harris listen to?
What were you listening to when you was high? What was on? What song was
it? Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah, definitely Snoop. Uh-huh. Tupac, for sure.
What are you listening to now? What's your favorite hip-hop artist now?
Okay. Now, listen. She said she listened to Snoop and Tupac when she was in college getting high. Then, Envy said, what do you listen to now? Okay. Y'all heard that? I want y'all to just catch all this stuff. What do you listen to now? So we're talking about two different time frames here. She listened to Snoop and Tupac when she was getting high in college. And then he asked her, what do you listen to now?
That's my history with the
What
banks.
Do you listen to? Because I know she has to go. So what does Kamala Harris listen to?
What were you listening to when you was high? What was on? What song was it?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah, definitely Snoop. Uh-huh. Tupac, for sure.
What are you listening to now? What's your favorite hip-hop artist now? What's your favorite artist?
You know who I really love is Cardi B.
You like Cardi B?
I really do.
Okay.
I really do. Everybody gets really, just jokes. Sometimes I just turn on Be Careful of Me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there we go. All right. So y'all heard that. Now, she said she listened to Tupac and Snoop while she was in college. And we all pointed out that Kamala Harris graduated college in 1986. Tupac and Snoop didn't have any records out in no damn 1986. Tupac and Snoop were not discovered in 1986. So there were no Tupac and Snoop records. It was impossible for her to have listened to Tupac and Snoop. Now, some of her supporters, they try to grasp for straws. They try to say, well, she graduated, she went to grad school or she went to some other kind of school to be an attorney. She went into school until 1989 or 1990. Still, there was no Snoop and Tupac. Y'all can't get around that. They try to push it up to 1990. No. Snoop and Tupac did not have records out at the time. In this woman's desperate attempt to come across as hip and with it, she keeps failing every single time. Now, all she had to do was say, you know, tell the truth. All she had to do was just tell the truth about what she listened to. The timeline don't add up, and some of her supporters were like, well, maybe she forgot. You don't forget what you listened to when you were in college. You don't misremember a whole album that wasn't even out. Look, when you guys were in high school, music helps you remember little milestones in high school. You remember what you listened to when you went to the little skating rink. You remember what you listened to when you went to the prom. You remember what you listened to when you hung with your friends. You know, everybody knows what they listened to in high school. Those songs that were out, that helps you remember what year the shit was popping. So it's not like she misremembered. You don't misremember anything like that. She just tried to make it up because she wasn't listening to none of them. So she thought, okay, I'll just say Tupac and Snoop because they were probably out at that time and that'll make me sound hip. That's all she was doing, and she failed again. And this is very significant because if this woman will lie about little bitty stuff like that, what else she gonna lie about? Damn, that ain't even nothing to lie about. She could have been honest about that. I mean, this woman does this all the time. Ain't that right, Fife? I love Tribe Called Quest. Ain't that right, Fife? Man, Fife is dead. He's been dead for 6 years. Oh. Well, I love Salt and Paprika. I love them. So people are clowning on Twitter. But the thing is, this woman must not have listened to any hip hop at all. When this woman was in college and grad school, that was literally the golden era of hip hop. If you were a hip hop head or hip hop fan, or if you listened to any, you knew some records from that time. This was literally the golden damn era. All the best records in hip hop came out at the time she was in damn college and grad school. From 86 to 89, you had some of the best hip hop records in history. You had Slick Rick, Dougie Fresh, KRS-One, Boogie Down Productions, Big Daddy Kane, Marley Marl, NWA, Ice-T, Kid and Play, Salt and Pepper, Eric B. and Rock M, Run DMC, Houdini. You had, I mean, the laundry list could just go on and on. And this fool said, Snoop and Tupac. Really? That means this woman has no inkling of any idea of what was happening as far as hip hop during that time. At all. Oh my goodness. And people, some of her supporters are so desperate with trying to cape for her. I've had some fools hop on my timeline talking about, well, maybe, you know, what, Tupac has some underground tapes out. Maybe she talking about them, because technically he did have some underground tapes around. Stop. Let it go. Are you that damn desperate? Really? Are you that desperate to think that this woman had access to some unknown underground Tupac tape that nobody else had access to? Y'all desperate as hell at this point. Y'all just reaching. And then they try to switch it up by saying, well, she really, when she was talking about smoking the weed, see, Envy had asked her what she listening to now. So she was really talking about what she listening to now. No, she wasn't. That's why I slowed it down. They asked her what she was listening to when she was getting high. She said Tupac and Snoop. She ain't listening to no Tupac now. Ain't no new Tupac records out, so she ain't listening to them now. Then that's why Envy asked her, what do you listen to now? Oh, I listen to Cardi B. So this is significant. If this person can't even be honest about some this insignificant, that wasn't even nothing to lie about. These Negroes think that we stupid as hell. And speaking of her and Cory Booker, you know, Cory Booker, he has this thing where he went around talking about some imaginary black dude that he knew named T-Bone. Have y'all heard about this? He was going around talking about some imaginary black dude who was a drug dealer in Jersey named T-Bone that he knew. And he goes around to white audiences talking about some damn T-Bone. And how T-Bone was a drug dealer and he learned so much from T-Bone. And, you know, I'm like, what is the T? You ain't met nobody named no damn T-Bone? T-Bone? Cory Booker got to be the corniest nigga ever. Ain't nobody named no damn T-Bone a drug kingpin nowhere in Jersey. Cory Booker, this dude, his tap dancing is just ridiculous at this point. But yeah, even other white people are like, hey, I don't know about that one, Corey. Even white people are questioning that. Like, T-Bone? Corey, I could have thought of a better name than some damn T-Bone. What the hell is a T-Bone? That's the best you can think of, Corey? So, you know, Corey don't hang around black folks either. If you done made up an imaginary Negro and his name is T-Bone, Corey's been looking at old Dolomite movies. This This, where did you get T-Bone? And he's going around telling these stories. I guess it's making him sound edgy when he gets around white people. I don't know if it makes him sound edgy. But white people do that. White people are very good at having these fake stories about how they interacted with some random black person and how the black person was a thug and a gangster and they somehow survived being around this hardcore black person. White people got stories like that all the time. White people love telling lies about some type of black danger they were in around a black person. They love doing that. They're very good at telling that lie. And again, Cory Booker, that's all he's really hung around, a bunch of white people. So he's taking on those same characteristics. That same jive-ass, peripheral viewpoint of black folks. You dig? But this dude, man, good Lord. T-Bone, that's the best you can do? Good Lord.
What do you want?
This is Cory Booker and T-Bone talking.
My talk. Where's your warrant at?
It's the FBI. This is my search warrant.
This is Cory Booker and T-Bone talking.
Hold on. There's nothing in my trunk, man.
Open up the trunk.
Him and T-Bone was making a drug deal. Hold on. No, no.
You're under arrest. You're going to have to take me.
Him and T-Bone were doing karate on each other.
One more move and you're dead.
Oh, my goodness. But this nigga Corey is ridiculous. Hold on, let me put my Mac and music back on. Speaking of ridiculousness and speaking of soft shoeing, Steve Harvey had on Monique on his show, and everybody's talking about that. And they were talking about Monique being blacklisted. And, you know, Steve said some things that are questionable. Some people agreed with them, some people didn't. And I want y'all to judge this, guys. Is Steve being a sacrificial Sambo, or is it just soft shoeing on this? I want y'all to listen to this. He's talking about how Monique is being blacklisted and he wants to help her out, and he's talking about what went wrong. I want y'all to listen. I'm going to play the clip. Hold on 1 second.
I said to you, Steve, mind this. And y'all know I did nothing wrong. Y'all know my husband did nothing wrong. But none of y'all in real time, was strong enough to go publicly and say we can't throw our sister under the bus.
Because, Mo, listen to me. We fighting two wars here.
What war?
There's two wars. It's what your issue is, and it's what the perception of the issue is, and the narrative has changed.
See, I'm hearing what you're saying, baby, and I agree with it when the narrative changes. But if all of y'all said, this is the only issue I have with it, baby, when all of y'all said privately, to include Oprah, all of y'all said privately, I've done nothing wrong.
When you tell the truth, you have to deal with the repercussions of the truth. We black out here. We can't come out here and do it any kind of way we want to.
Listen to me.
Your husband can't be the Sidney that he really is out here.
Let me tell you something.
That flexing, we
got to
flex a different way. We out here in a game. This the money game. This ain't the black man's game. This ain't the white man's game.
It's
this
the money game.
But we in the money game. And you cannot sacrifice yourself. The best thing you can do for poor people is not be one of them. You cannot help them.
We're in the money game, but let me tell you.
Oh, damn. Steve said the best you can do for poor people is not be one of them. You can't help them all. Let me play that one again. Hold on.
Wait, we out here in a game. This the money game. This ain't the black man's game. This ain't the white man's game.
It's
this
the money game.
But we in the money game. And you cannot sacrifice yourself. The best thing you can do for poor people is not be one of them. You cannot help them.
We're in the money game. But let me tell you what the game is before the money game. Before the money game, it's called the integrity game. And we've lost the integrity worrying about the money.
But Mo,
wait a minute.
If I crumble,
if you
my children crumble, my grandchildren crumble. I cannot, for the sake of my integrity, stand up here and let everybody that's counting on me crumble so I can make a statement. Ways to win the war
white people
in
are clapping.
A different way.
Okay.
For the sake of my integrity.
Now, right there. Now, see, Steve is trying to act like the sacrificial Sambo. See, a lot of black folks, especially older, they try to play that game. They try to play the sacrificial Sambo game. I'm giving up my integrity so that I can help my family and my staff so I don't crumble so y'all can eat good. No. That's just for those butter biscuits are good. Steve is like, you know, I ain't trying to sacrifice my integrity. Integrity in smegrity. You know, I need this paper. Nah, you gotta have integrity. And I'm with Monique on that. You got to have some integrity with whatever you do. That's the only thing you have. You dig? When you give up that integrity and that money gets real janky, then you ain't got nothing. So that money will fluctuate. See, your integrity should stand like a rock. That money is going to come and go. Look, dude, I've been in the game. I've been out the game. I've done square shed hustle things, dude. You know, change avenues and paths in life. The money goes up, the money goes down, that money comes and goes. But one thing that has never changed about me is my integrity. There's just certain things that I will do, and there's certain things that I just will not do. You can't pay me enough to do certain things, and I'm good. You dig? That do anything for money, and I'm gonna throw my integrity away because I got to feed my family. I got, dude, you can have integrity and make sure your family's straight. You can make sure your family is straight and you still have integrity, man. Damn. Hold on. Let me play that again.
But the money game is called the integrity game, and we've lost the integrity worrying about the money.
But Mo,
and wait a minute.
If my children crumble, my grandchildren crumble. I cannot, for the sake of my integrity, stand up here and let everybody that's counting on me crumble so I can make a statement. There are ways to win the war in a different way. We got more right after this.
Let me wait.
I'm back here with my sister Monique, and we're getting real. Okay, Mo, so listen to me. Here is what I want you to understand about this whole thing.
Yes.
As we try to come through this, because what I want really is for you to come through, because I know who you really are. And so what I want you to do is come through this with a different way. Because you, Monique, you my girl. I love you like a sister. I hate what's happening to you. I hate what they're saying that's not true. I want them to know that you are caring, that you're a great mother, that you are incredible talent. I don't like the fact that you've been blackballed. You can be unblackballed. You too talented to have to worry about all this where the next one coming from. I want this to end for you.
Well,
I want it to end for you, Monique, because I love you. Because these people are doing it the wrong way, and you better than that. You are better than that. I probably should have called you as soon as, but I didn't. I got locked.
Okay. That's enough of that. Some of the stuff I can rock with, I get, but that whole thing about the integrity, oh, my God, my family, everybody's counting on me. I was hearing some loud taps on that one. somebody said comment on him grabbing on it. No, they were just being passionate. They were being passionate. But the thing is, man, you got to have confidence enough in yourself. My thing is, there's a lot of black people out here, especially older black people from that baby boom generation, a lot of older black people, and really that civil rights generation, to be honest. It's really that little civil rights crowd from that era. A lot of them feel like if they don't suck up to white folks, just life is over. Especially a lot of black folks who work in broadcast. Y'all remember I was down in Miami doing that interview at that station, and I was with some of those same black folks, and we had a conversation, and I brought up an anecdote about Oprah being told that her family told her to go find some good white folks, and too many black people have that mentality. And the radio host was looking at me like, well, you ain't got no good white folks? And I was like, oh my goodness, you one of them, damn. But black people, especially young black folks, let me talk to you. Let me talk to you. Because you have a lot of people from that Steve Harvey generation. And they struggled a lot. And really, them struggling and, you know, trying to make it and all, they were broken. They got broken a long time ago. So they dreamed of getting a white person to really put them on and feed them. And once they get that, they'll never let that go. And they've been broken. These dudes have been buck broken. It goes beyond just sacrificing. It's just getting into soft shoeing. You know, and when you see cats like Steve, and also with people like Terry Crews, I saw a video of him, and he's a big old broken buck. Terry Crews was doing some video, some talk, some speech somewhere, and he start crying. And you know that Steve is on his show crying all the time. He starts talking, and then he starts crying for no reason. You know, when you see old grown niggas crying like that, that's that plantation buck broken spirit. They down in the sunken place low key. They're always crying. He's talking, and I like to thank everyone. I'm just thinking about my friends growing up. I was just thinking about my man in college. You know, good people, you know, just start crying for no reason. Yeah, that's that buck broken spirit, man. That's that plantation thing when niggas always running around crying, Lord Jesus. I feel so good about Massa coming through to give me a hug, Lord Jesus. Steve is always crying. And compromising your integrity, that's what that shit is really about. You know the shit that you're doing is on some soft shoe Samboan. Yeah, you rich and you crying. Because, you got all that money. That money don't isn't a substitute for a soul and integrity. You're like, damn, I done did some cutthroat stuff to get where I got, and I'm still not really happy. I done cut all these throats to get this little paper that I got. See, cats be, you know, niggas know what they've done. And Steve, we've heard rumors about Steve, and I don't like to put out too many rumors, but, you know, Steve and Bernie Mac and somebody in the chat room, y'all can kind of help me. Steve and Bernie Mac fell out from what I heard. And again, this is a rumor that's been circulating. Him and Bernie Mac fell out because in the Ocean's 11's movie, you know, they were auditioning a lot of black actors in Hollywood. And, you know, the Ocean's 11, that's a big franchise. You know, it was a pretty good franchise. They had a few sequels to the Ocean's 11 movie. And Bernie ended up getting it. Bernie got the Ocean's 11. And from what I understand, Steve went behind Bernie's back and called the producer and said that he would do Bernie's role for half the money. Now, people in the chat room, have you heard that version of it? That's the version I heard of it, that he was hating on him. You ding? Did D.L. Hughley speak about that? And D.L. is my dude. But that's the version I heard. Man. So, yeah, that type of stuff. And, you know, Bernie was like, I'm cool on this dude. It wasn't Ocean's 11. It was Charlie's Angels. Okay, it was one of those movies, okay? It was Charlie's Angels. Okay, I heard it was Ocean's 11. See, that's the thing. You hear so many different versions of a rumor, so. Okay. But, yeah, man. See, when you ain't got no integrity, when you say it's money over integrity, I ain't gonna be poor. When you'll do anything for some paper, no, man, no. You don't want to be that type of dude. You don't want to be that type of person. You don't have to do in cutthroat to get no paper, man. If your mouthpiece is tight and your hustle bones are in your body, man, you're gonna get some paper like with me, man. That's why nobody who knows me, nobody says anything bad about me. You got dumbasses on the internet, just internet trolls. And when people say something slick, it's always somebody who got to hide because they don't know me. And it's just, you know, these are little assholes who don't have integrity themselves. But people who know me, people who ran with me, nobody says anything negative about me. Because I ain't never did nothing shiesty to nobody. I've always dealt with people on the level of integrity. You can't find anybody who say I beat them out of money or anything like that. And you can get yours without having to go that route with people. See, again, that older crowd, they have that poverty complex where they're so tired of being poor. And, you know, they've been taught find some good white folks. That's all they know. So they got that plantation mentality where they'll cut your throat to get close to massa. They'll shoot you in the back to get close to massa. That's all they know. They don't know how to get out here in the streets, man, and get out here and get around other black folks and just chop it up and just be straight up and down. A lot of them just don't know how to get down like that. A lot of them don't know how to create anything or orchestrate anything or organize anything without a white person holding their hand. And we got too many old Negroes who are giving the wrong messages to a lot of young black people. That's what I don't like. You see, I deal with a lot of young black people. You dig? And out there, I'm speaking of young black people and old black people, out there in Virginia, you know, where you had the governor who had on blackface. They found some college yearbooks of him with blackface and Klan robes. And people are trying to call for him to resign. Do y'all know they had an article a couple of days ago talking about black leaders from all over Virginia get together to show forgiveness for the governor? They get together so they can have redemption prayer for the governor. So they went and got a bunch of old civil rights Negroes and start calling them black leaders who they're nobody's leaders. They ain't lead nobody. They're nobody's leaders at all. They got these Negroes and paraded them around, and they out here talking about how we should forgive the governor. It was a long time ago. We need redemption. Boy, these Negroes sicken me. My young black folks, do not be like them. If you got parents or grandparents like them, let them die quietly. Don't you ever be like that. We'll be right back in the same boat we've been in for decades. Do not be like your Sambo buck dancing relatives like that. We need ADOS foundational black warriors right now. We need a warrior class who's going to stop the BS. We don't need that. These old Sambos putting a bullseye on your back so they can get some extra damn butter biscuits by getting up here kissing ass. They get their little kickbacks and crumbs, and all the black youths now got a bullseye on their back because you got a governor whose nickname was Coon Man. The governor's nickname in college was Coon Man. That's how much of a racist he is. So you see Virginia, no wonder you have white supremacist rallies out there where they're beating up and killing people and the police don't want to prosecute no damn body. Now you see when the governor is Coon Man. And then young people have to deal with the backlash of these old decrepit Negroes, and they got to deal with the backlash of Steve and all these people out here soft shoeing. You see? And their mentality is, well, the best thing about poor people, you don't want to be nobody poor. You can't help everybody poor now. Come on, man. But all my young people, yeah, somebody, they look up Coon Man. That's what his name was. The governor's name, the governor of Virginia, when he was in college, his nickname was Coon Man. Because of his blackface antics. Look that up. Look up Governor of Virginia and Coon Man. Google that and see what you find. You dig? But yeah, man, we can't teach our children to bow down and submit to these white supremacists out here. We can't do that. We need a warrior class. And this is why it's good that we're consolidating around Foundational Black Americans, ADOS. That's a good thing, because it's been about time that we start trimming the fat. It's been about time that we started to do that so we can all get on code. Because the thing is, it's been so hard for us to get on code because we got all these other black folks, quote unquote, around us who come from these foreign countries. And we're trying to get them on code, and they're doing everything to undermine us. So now that we're learning how to identify with people who are from other places who are just not going to get on code with us, that makes it better for us. And then we get some momentum going, which is a good thing. Because another thing we got to stop doing, we got to stop giving the white supremacist props for doing something normal. There was a story that came out about this white teacher, this male teacher at like an elementary school. And it was a little black girl. She looked real, real young. Like she was about 5 or 6 or something. She's like, this looked like a preschool almost. But he's a teacher. He was a physical ed teacher, whatever. And it was a video that went viral of him putting a little girl's hair in a ponytail. A little black girl, she said she wanted to put her hair in a ponytail, so he got a rubber band and put her hair in a ponytail. Have y'all seen this? And that's the story right there. That's it. That's the story right there. People in the chat room are saying, so? That's the story right there. That is the story. He put this little girl's hair in a ponytail. So now this has gone viral and it got 3 million views. They were talking about it all on Good Morning America, talking about how this video, this video is warming hearts all over the world. And they're showing him, somebody was filming him putting a rubber band in this little girl's hair. And they were talking about, oh, this is just so precious. Oh, this is just so beautiful. And I'm thinking, and I tweeted about this earlier, I said, have they set the bar so low for the dominant white society? Have they set the bar so incredibly low where if a person who's white does something normal, we got to stop and give you praise? Is it that bad? Do people around the world think that people in the dominant white society are so inherently evil, so inherently demonic? Do they think that where if you do something humane, all of a sudden we just got to stop and give you props over something normal? Is the bar that low? That's something you're supposed to do. And my thing is, I'm not giving a white person props for not being a violent, disgusting racist. I'm not giving you props. I'm sorry. I'm not giving you props for interacting with a black person and you're not causing some kind of harm or you're not doing anything antagonistic. I'm not giving you any props just because you're not harming a black person. You're not getting props from me or any other black person. We are not going to give you props for being goddamn normal, man. I mean, they're really blowing this story up. They're like, the way, dude, this story, they're acting like they about to make a Lifetime movie of this story, and it's just a white dude putting a rubber band in this kid's hair in the gym. Something that black people do all the time. We see kids, hey, let me do your hair, little boy. Come here. Let me braid your braid came loose. Come here. All right, go and play. We do that all the time. We do that all the time. And the thing is, the article, and the his name is Coach Jonathan Oliver. That's the guy's name. His name is Coach Jonathan Oliver. This was, let me see what city this is. Let me see what city this is, Coach. Y'all bear with me. Let me see what city this is, just to be clear, Coach John. Where is this? Okay. Auto Dynamics. Where the hell is this thing? Gym teacher fixes kid's hair. There's a little girl named Kristen Paul. What city is this? It's in Georgia. Okay, it's in Valdosta, Georgia. Valdosta, Georgia. And even the articles about it, it's so dramatic. It's like white savior talk. He's like, the quote is, it was just a ponytail. You know, I saw a child in need. And I just, you know, when your job goes beyond teaching... Oh my God. Now that I can see the Lifetime movie, Tom Hanks starring in It Was Just a Ponytail, a story about redemption, a story about togetherness, a story about healing and divine. Stop it. It Was Just a Ponytail. Coming on tonight at 10 on Lifetime. But we're not going to give you props for being normal. We're not going to give you props for doing stuff you're supposed to do. I only give you props when it comes to racial matters. If you stop or punish another person who's practicing white supremacy, that's the only time I give you props. If you punish a white supremacist, then you come to the barbecue. Nothing else you can do will get you to the barbecue. That barbecue that Negroes love inviting you to, when you punish another white supremacist as a white person, I'll make some barbecue chicken, ribs, beans, greens, peas, tomatoes, you name it. But I'm not giving you props for being around a black person and the fact that you simply didn't harm them, and I'm supposed to give you praises and props. No, I'm not doing that. We need that John Brown spirit up out of you. You dig? And y'all Negroes need to stop giving them props for doing that. They come around and they start dancing and hugging and y'all just melt. That's why they don't have to do nothing. They don't have to produce no justice. They come around you with symbolic gestures, hugging and rubbing on you like you a damn pet. And y'all sitting there loving it. Oh, thank you, white mama. Y'all like Steve Harvey. Oh, thank you for coming through. It's so good that you came here and you helped me. So I won't be Poe no more and be like Monique. Stop it, Negroes. And this is why, you know, we got to be on this thing where we have integrity. We got to be on this thing where anybody in the dominant society come around us, they're going to have to come with some tangibles. This is why it goes back to these politicians. We're not going to let them off the hook when it comes to them dealing with us. with the Kamalas and the Cory Bookers and the Bernie Sanders and who else, whoever. When they come around us, we're going to have to demand tangibles. Tangibles are nothing. We don't want to hear nothing else. We don't want to hear nothing about you raising some kind of program, some lift program for the poor. We don't want to hear all these code words. We don't want to hear criminal justice. Criminal justice is a very derogatory term to apply to black people. We got to understand when that's an insult. When they come around us talking about, yeah, we're going to help black folks by criminal justice reform, that gives the impression that we're already criminals. And nobody wants to reform a criminal. All black people are not damn criminals. Also, this is another thing, family. Don't let them run that HBCU hustle on us. That's another thing. Y'all notice that whenever we talk about we need something done for us, we need a black agenda. Notice they start talking about, well, we're going to give some resources to HBCUs. Family, that is a con game. Do you understand me? Y'all don't understand how much of a con game that is. First of all, these HBCUs are pretty much white run. The white people run them behind the scenes, number one. Number two, with these HBCUs, do you know that many HBCUs around the country, the majority of the people at some of them are white? Like in Virginia, they got one in Virginia, and the majority of the people there are white. Down in Texas, they got an HBCU. The majority of the people there are Hispanic. Do you know with some of these HBCUs, they have scholarships for undocumented immigrants so they can come in, get money, so they can go to these HBCUs. They got all types of little money set aside for these people. That DACA program had all types of money for them. Hell, you could just show up with no paperwork, fresh off of a damn boat, and go get you some money and go to an HBCU. Do y'all know that? Look up that DACA program and the HBCU money that they got. Dude, that's a con game, man. These HBCUs are full of white people, Hispanics, and African and Caribbean immigrants. Look up what I'm saying, man. Somebody showed me some scholarships today. Man, we were just going through a lot of these scholarships. They got all types of scholarships specifically for undocumented immigrants, undocumented Africans, undocumented Hispanics. They got all types of scholarships for all these other groups, but they do not have all these scholarships for foundational black Americans. I couldn't find one specific for black people. Help me look some up if there are. I can show you scholarship after scholarship after scholarship, all types of money if you're Hispanic, if you gay, if you are an immigrant from Africa. They got all types of little money, man. But not none for black Americans. When you Google scholarships for black Americans, you know what you're going to see? Minority scholarships. You're going to see a diversity scholarship. You're going to see people of color scholarship. You're going to see the closest one I saw. It was for people of African descent, which includes Ethiopia and the continent of Africa. Don't let them run that HBCU hustle. Don't mean nothing. That everybody and their mama go to a damn HBCU. They've been out here campaigning to get other non-black people to come through, or non-black Americans to come through to these HBCUs. Dude, they got all types of little money waiting. That's why when black American kids, by the time you get up to the HBCU, all the little scholarship money is all tricked off. By the time you get there, you got to scrap and scrounge for the little crumbs that's left. Man, I was looking at this stuff today. I'm seeing all types of new scholarships. I mean, just thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars for undocumented immigrants to go to HBCUs, man. Look that up, dude. Don't ever let them run that HBCU game on us. Yeah, HBCUs are for everybody now, dude. It's for everybody. When they got you thinking and assuming that this is some money that's going to go to all these black kids. Basically, you just funded a bunch of white people and Hispanics. So we ain't going for that. Cancel that. That HBCU hustle, that's a con game that they run. Now, they know. That's why they ain't got no problem saying HBCU. Why you think they're so quick to say that? Oh, yeah, we got a black agenda. We're going to give a lot of money to HBCUs. You're giving them to the Kamalas. Kamala, she's a second-gen immigrant. You're giving them to people like her. Remember, Rachel Dolezal went to a damn HBCU. So don't let people try to pretend that an HBCU at this point is the measure of being black. That don't mean nothing no more. That don't mean nothing. As far as blackness, you going to an HBCU, they got you thinking that it's going to be like the Spike Lee movie School Days, just a bunch of black folks up there doing step shows. No, they got tacos, burritos, quesadillas, tomatoes, you name it. Man, please look at what I'm saying. There's all types of money for all these other groups. Yeah, Roland. Of course, Roland. That's what they get paid for, Roley and all these people to prop up and big up these HBCUs and all these immigrant groups are coming in and getting all those scholarships, man. That's why they go around saying that. Remember, the Boulay and all these guys, their job is to get their crumbs and butter biscuits for themselves and keep it away from us. That's why they do everything they can to keep money away from us. Their job, they got their butter biscuits already. They got theirs already. So their job is to make sure nothing comes to us. Roland and none of those people are going to make sure any money or any resources or any tangibles come to us. That's their job, to make sure we don't get nothing. We better understand that part of the game. That's why the minute we start talking about tangibles for us, what about the immigrants? They start talking about immigrants and all these other groups. All that whole little Boulé crowd. All that Angela Rye and all these people. They start talking about all these immigrant groups and what we need to do for everybody. You dig? So look, we're going to have to be on some tangibles 2020 hard. No, we're going to need some of that land. We're going to need you to name us by name. American, black American descendants of slaves, foundational black Americans. We're going to need us named. Don't use that HBCU. HBCU, that's another trick word. Don't let them use trick words. Minority is a trick word. Whenever you see people of color, that's a trick word. Don't ever, 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 ever use people of color to describe yourself again, black people. Don't use minority to ever, ever describe yourself. Do not use those terms. These are trick words. Words are very important, family. Let them know we're either foundational black Americans or descendants of slaves. Let them know that you're a very distinct group. And I know I have a lot of immigrants cats who are listening. Y'all better stop being butthurt, because there's a lot of these dudes who are talking real slick. They're real butthurt because black people in America are circling our wagons the way they are. We were arguing with a Jamaican dude earlier today, but got this dude's name, but he was like, oh man, because he was going in on some of my friends on Twitter, and I kind of stepped in and checked some of the BS he was talking. And, oh, man, I like your stuff, man. I love your movies. I said, no. You can't treat me one way and then try to dump on my other folks now. So I had to get my dude straight. I had to get him straight. I said, look, we can't play that game, brother, where y'all coming over here disrespecting us. That's going to stop. I don't play that at all. No other group is going to come over here and do that, especially folks who look like us. As much as we fought to get you over, I'm not having anybody come over and talk greasy to us now that we're circling our wagons. All of a sudden, these folks are talking about how divisive we are, and these are the same people who got Jamaican flags and Caribbean flags all in their profile. I'm like, brother, you got your flag. You're representing where you were born. We're doing the same thing. Like, oh, man, it just seemed like y'all hating on us. What the hell we hating on you for? We the ones who helped you get here. And this dude was like, y'all ain't nobody helped me do shit. And that right there makes me want to say, you hold your own nuts very hard. Y'all need to hold your own nuts. Let me tell any immigrant, especially a black immigrant listening to this, y'all don't fix your mouth talking about how a black person didn't help you do nothing. If you're an immigrant over here, again, like we said back in the 1960s, even before that, it was black people fighting to get you over here. It was those civil rights laws that we fought for that helped you get over here. Even today, right now, it's foundational black Americans who are electing these people who keep letting you over. We're the ones electing the Obamas and all these people who are opening the floodgates for you to come in here. We're the people putting this these folks in power. We're supporting them and putting them out there and letting them open the floodgate because we're thinking, okay, you're going to come over here and get down with us and we're going to be good. Not only that, and I'm talking to my immigrants in the diaspora because I want y'all to feel me. When you get over here, y'all eating off our tax dollars. See, we pay a lot of taxes. I do. So all the good eating and the good living and all these little set-asides and kickbacks you're getting, that's with our tax dollars. You didn't have no tax dollars coming through. Those are our tax dollars feeding you, getting you over here, getting you straight, getting you through school. These are our goddamn tax dollars. So our tax dollars is funding stuff that we have difficulty getting. So we can't be the sacrificial Negroes for you no more. Especially when you've shown nothing but contempt and disrespect. And your home countries never reciprocate. You dig? Y'all eat off us, eat off our taxes. We fight to get you over here. Then you get over here and get right next to white daddy and then try to sabotage us. See, that's going to be over. And then cats got the nerve to start saying, hey, what about Pan-Africanism? Well, you weren't Pan-African at all. The Pan-African thing has been real one-sided for too long. Now, when some of y'all over there in those home countries, and I said this a couple of days ago, when y'all start giving some parcels of land, when y'all start giving us dual citizenship, then we can have Pan-African talk again. But we ain't even having that conversation no more because it's just too one-sided. When y'all start letting us in the African Union over there, when y'all let people in the Western Hemisphere over there in the African Union, when y'all start doing that, when y'all start opening up some of those lands and really connecting with us and offering us some tangibles, then we can talk that. And I got love for you. I got a lot of love for people over here in the diaspora, in the Caribbean. I got a lot of love. But again, y'all can't keep sending your Sambos over here and they're talking crazy while they're eating off us. The kitchen is closed. The kitchen is closed right now. And, you know, we're going to have to start preparing meals for the family over here. That's just what it is. See, we're going to have to start throwing our weight around. We're going to have to start getting rough on folks. We got to stop playing Mr. Nice Guy, Mrs. Nice Guy with everybody. We're going to have to start treating everybody the same way they treat us. And understand, when black folks, when we play as a group, when foundational black Americans, when we play as a group, we win. That's what people get so nervous about. When we start playing as a group, we start winning. Everybody gets nervous because, see, we different. We built a certain way. When we start saying, hey, us black Americans, it's going to be us against everybody if that's going to be it, then folks start getting nervous. Because we win when we play. When we get on code, we win. That's why they don't like to get us on code. They do not like us getting on code. They don't want us to be on code. Black men and black women all on the same code. They've always fought that. They don't want us to get on code. Whenever we get on code, we start creating and building and things just come up and things last. Just like in the 70s, hip hop was us getting on code. The creation was hip of hip hop was black folks who were left in squalor in New York. They gutted New York. The white flight happened. The tax money left the city, left the Bronx. The Bronx looked like a third world country. So black folks got on code and said, okay, we ain't going to do all this old stuff. We ain't going to bang on each other too hard. We're going to create this music and at least temporarily have a code of conduct at these parties and just kind of create our own culture right here. And that's how hip hop got started. You dig? And these brothers selling mixtapes all over the place, and that created the hip hop music industry. You dig? We get on code, we win. When we get on code, when we circle our wagons and say, this is what we are going to do as a group, and we don't need acknowledgement from them. We do not need acknowledgement from them. Look at the success of Hidden Colors, the Hidden Colors series. That's a bunch of us getting on code and not looking for approval from the dominant society. That's us getting on code. We all got on code, got the resources together, got the crew together, got the talent together, and we put Hidden Colors together. It's black from top to bottom, front to back, and the Hidden Colors series outsold major movie documentaries. That's why they don't like talking about it, and I don't need them to talk about it. Numbers don't lie. The Hidden Colors series outsold their movies. It was number one all across the board, outselling major movies. Because we're on code. When we get on code, we win. When we get on code, family, we win. Hidden Colors 5 is going to be out this summer. If you don't have Hidden Colors 1 through 4, y'all need to go there now. Go to HiddenColorsFilm.com to get Hidden Colors 1, 2, 3, and 4. HiddenColorsFilm.com, ladies and gentlemen. Also, family, go to Tangibles 2020. Put a little something on Tangibles 2020 because we got this movement going heavy. We're on these people's necks. We are not stopping. We are making a lot of stuff go viral. Tangibles2020.com. We're making this thing happen. We're on code, and we need to stay on code. We're flexing our weight by being on code. Much respect to the family. Y'all have a good night. I'm going to holler at you guys Sunday.